Now, what year was it then that you married him, B?
Let's see. In the late 30s, I guess. I don't remember. I don't remember what the... Yeah, because Julie was born in 36. I must have gotten married with him in 34 or 35 or something around there. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So your first two children, though, still kept your first husband's name?
When they started school, I gave them both names. Mm. So then when they got out, when they got to grow a little bigger, I told them their story. I told them who the father and everything was. So they said that the father that they had was their father.
Mm-hmm. Did he officially adopt them or anything?
No, uh-huh. No. But they wanted to go by Morales. Mm-hmm. So they always went by Morales. Mm. So when they were old enough, like I say, I told them about it, and then I took them to see their father because I knew where he was all the time. And so I took him to see him, but he didn't care for them. He cared for them, I guess, in his own way or some way. Anyway, he was always with different women. He had already another woman, and he had
also 15.
I don't know how old this one was. I didn't see her, but from this one of the 15, she had a boy. So my daughter always tells me, she says, I wish I could get a hold of some of them people to find out if I got any half brothers or half sisters around, which I tell her, I said, yeah, you must have, but we don't know.
Yeah.
He's probably dead by now,
right.
And all his family probably, his sisters probably live, but his mother is very sure she's dead.
Now, when you moved to Pasadena, where were your parents at that point?
I took them with me. I took them with me, and they were with me when I started to work.
Now, so your father had retired then, is that it?
He was, he was kind of old, and he had rheumatism and stuff like that, so he wasn't working.
So you were supporting?
Yeah, I had them there living, and I took care of them there.
Now, tell me about where you lived in Pasadena. What was that like when you first moved there? Was that a house?
Yeah, it's a big house.
Uh-huh.
We first moved, it was there on Fair Oaks. Let's see, what was the number on the Fair Oaks? I don't remember what the number, but that two houses still exist.
Mm.
It was a little house, we moved in that one first. And then afterwards, the big house, it was from the same owner. The people had lived there for many years, but all of a sudden they moved. And when they moved, I took it over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's see, about three or four bedrooms.
Uh-huh.
It was a pretty good house. So I took that one, and I lived there for quite a while.
And what was your daily life like then, once you were married to...
To Julio. We used to go out. We used to come to Los Angeles to see his mother, see my sister.
Uh-huh.
And there was a little area there that all the family lived together, His mother lived like that, and then my sister lived like that, and the mother-in-law lived over here. It was like a little
community.
Yeah. So
this was in East LA?
Mm-hmm. In Julian Street, near Evergreen.
Uh-huh.
So we used to go out there, and we used to sometimes go out on parties and stuff like that. And I always had parties in my house.
Oh, what kind of parties?
Well, birthday parties or Christmas parties or Thanksgiving parties. I had a lot of friends at that time.
Oh, where had you met these friends?
Well, it all started. He had Julio had a friend that he had known for years, so he knew where Julio was, and he came to visit him. And then he brought this other people, and then we got real close with this other people. And then that's how they would bring other people, and that's how we got. And then we go to parties they made, and you know, you meet people, and then that's just how it.
And was it all couples, or did you have women friends of your own?
No, couples.
It was all couples.
Couples.
What would your day be like in the daytime then, with your two kids, and he was at work, and your mother?
Well,
and father
by that time, when I was living there in Pasadena, then I had my little girl,
mm-hmm.
and then I had my little boy, because you see, from Julio Morales, I had two.
Oh, I see. And when were they born?
They were born, I think Julie was born in, like I said, in 36. And I think Nada was born in 37 or 38,
mm-hmm.
around there.
Mm-hmm.
So by that time, you know, they were babies yet. But then when the war, after Pearl Harbor, we moved to this other house, and that's where they got to be big
I
kids.
I see. Now, so you had four children at home then?
I had,
uh-huh.
Yes.
And your day would be spent primarily taking care of the children? And
yeah, taking care of them and doing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you have any friends that you would see during the day?
No.
Or most of the friends were with your husband in the evening and
yeah.
Parties?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, on weekends, and that was when we did it, you know, not on weekdays. On weekends, we'd go to Los Angeles to party, but it wasn't a continuous, you know,
no.
Once in a while, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what sorts of things would you do as a family of you and Julio and the four children? Anything?
Nothing. Like I say, I didn't take trips. I didn't take
mm-hmm.
anything. I didn't know nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I did not even know how to drive a car, like I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So, just the big deal was on the weekends or go to Los Angeles. That was the biggest thrill.
Now, up until the time the war broke out, you hadn't thought about working.
Oh no, I had never thought about working. When Pearl Harbor. Then afterwards, we moved to 214 Pasadena Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big house, too. So then my brother, at that time, he had divorced his wife. He had separated. And so he had an adopted girl. And the woman, the wife, and she remarried. Well, the stepfather didn't like the girl. So she said, you go back to your father
mm-hmm.
if you want. So, because we considered her like ours, because
mm-hmm.
she and my mother had gotten her, when I was a kid, she had gotten her, she was working, she used to take care of children from the welfare county or something. And that's how she got that baby when she was 6 months old. And she gave it to my brother to take care of it because my brother didn't have no children.
Oh, I see.
So they took care of her, and she grew to be a big girl.
Mm-hmm.
But the father never claimed her. The father was in jail, and the mother was, anyway, she died, the mother and everything. So the girl was left alone, the baby. So when this happened, they divorced. The stepfather told her to go with her father. She didn't like the way things were going.
Mm-hmm.
So she came to Pasadena, and my brother brought her to me. He says, have her stay with you, and I'll give you some money every week. So
mm-hmm.
that's,
how old was she? Yeah.
She was only 16 or 15.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she wanted a job, but she couldn't get a job because she had to go to school. She still had to go to school. And they had these offices everywhere in Pasadena that I know, you know,
mm-hmm.
Of aircraft. You know, they had these unemployment offices. They were officer of aircraft in every place that you went. So I went in there to try and get her something because she wanted a job. But they said, oh, no, she's too young. He says, we got aircraft work right now for everybody. He says, except because she's too young. He says, why don't you get it? I said, me? I said, yeah, why don't you get the job? I said, well, I don't know. It struck me, you know, but the more I kept thinking about it, the more I said, that's a good idea. So I took the forms.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got home and told my husband, he hit the, he was one of those persons, you know, one of those men that didn't believe in the wife ever working and this and that. I said, well, I made up my mind. I said, I'm going to go to work, regardless whether you like it or not.
Had you ever defied him like that before?
No. So I said, I was determined, which now I'm very glad I did that. And so I filled the papers and everything, and I got the job. So then they asked me, he says, where do you want to go? You want to go to Los Angeles? You want to go to Burbank?
Mm-hmm.
I said, I don't know where Burbank is. I didn't know my way around. I like I say, the only way that I got to Los Angeles was with him driving me up there. Any time that I needed something like that, it was driving me up there. So I didn't know. So then I said, well, Los Angeles, I said, the streetcar passes by Fair Oaks there, close to where I live, and that drops me off in front up there in the job, so I think that that's the way I'm going to do it.
Mm.
So I told them that I'd go to Los Angeles. They had a plant in Pasadena where it was North America.
Oh.
But why I took Lockheed, I don't know. I had never been to Lockheed or nothing, you know, but I just liked that name, I guess, and I said, I'll go for Lockheed. So then I started working there, getting my papers and everything.
What do you think made you so determined after you got the application and had the argument with your husband about it? Why do you think you were so determined to do it?
I don't know. I just, all of a sudden, I said, no, it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good idea to go to work.
Did you know any other women who were working in defense industry at that point?
I knew that there was a lot of women, uh-huh. but I never knew of anybody in particular.
Uh-huh. So it was totally accidental, really, mm-hmm. that all this came
it all
about. Now, when what happened when you told your husband, I am going to go, I don't care?
Oh, he was upset to no end. And so he gave in.
Mm-hmm.
But then, afterwards, my little boy, he was going to school. He started going to school, my young one.
Mm-hmm.
And then they discovered that he had heart trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And they were ready to put him out of school and everything, and then they brought some doctors to check him up and everything. So they were. I used to see him, you know, and I used to cry,
mm-hmm.
because I figured that my little boy had heart trouble and that I could never take care of him, you know, because I didn't have no money to.
Mm-hmm.
I used to hear that they were making these operations in back east,
mm-hmm.
but I said, hey, where am I going to get any money like
mm-hmm.
that? So that, and then my oldest son, he got sick of pneumonia. So when he got sick of pneumonia, my husband right away, he jumped. He said, you see, because the kids are like this, because you're not here and this and that. Though my mother was there. But he blamed everything on me.
Yeah.
So I panicked. Then I couldn't get my son into the hospital, the one about pneumonia. So I couldn't even get a doctor. I called that day that he was very sick. I called, and I had to call the policeman. I told the police, I said, I need a doctor real bad, and I can't get a hold of a doctor because I don't have a family doctor. Because I never had a family doctor. I always took care of my kids, you know, they had little coughs, or I rubbed them with Vicks or whatever, you know, and I never had a family doctor. And all of them would refuse me because they'd say, am I your family doctor? I say, no, can't go. So finally I said, well, I called the police, and I told them, I said, I can't get a doctor. And they said, we'll send you one. And I said, will he come? I says, yeah, he'll come. So then he came.
Mm-hmm.
He was German. Lindheimer was his name. And he came, and he saw my boy through, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I stuck to him after that.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this while you were working?
Yes.
Right during the beginning of the war there.
Yeah, well, I was working, you see. So then when he was so sick like that, then I panicked and I went to Lockheed and I told him that I was quitting.
Mm-hmm.
That was when I quit.
Okay, well, what we should do,
it's a pleasure.
Okay, well, let me
tell
you. When you went down there and filled out the forms and then you took the forms back, I mean, let's go back to starting the job. What do you remember the sorts of things they told you? What kind of work did you think you might be doing?
Well, they told me that I would be doing structure work.
And what did that mean to you? Did you have any idea?
No. To me, everything was new.
Mm-hmm.
So then the day that I went in, they put me, they were doing the P-38s
uh-huh.
at that time. So they, I was at Plant 2. On 7th and Santa Fe,
uh-huh.
in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So they, I was on the 5th floor. I went up there, and then they put me, it was a big hallway like that, and they had like horses, and they had these elevators, and like that. And they put me way up in the back, putting little plate nuts, drilling holes. And they put me with some guy. He was kind of a, I don't know, he must have had something and some trouble with him because he was real stinker, real mean. A lot of them guys at the time resented women coming into jobs. And they let you know about it.
How would they let you know?
Oh, they tell you off. And this one was real mean. He says, do you have you ever done any work like this? I said, no. And I had never worked with men. I had never worked with men, and I was feeling just horrible. Horrible, because I never worked with men, you know, to be with men alone, you know, other than my husband. So then he says, you know what you got in your hand? He says, that's a rivet gun. I said, well, you know, what could I answer? I was terrified. So then time went on, and then I made a mistake. I messed up something or something, made a ding or something. Anyway, he got so irritable with me, he says, you're not worth, he says, the money Lockheed pays you.
How old was he?
Well, he was a young man, about maybe in his late 20s or so. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't have hurt me more if he would have slapped me. When he said that, I dropped the gun, and I went running, you know, to downstairs to the restroom with tears coming down. I felt so bad when he told me that. And at that time, the Lockheed started at 65 cents an hour. That's what I started. So he says, you're not worth the money that Lockheed's paying you. Here, you made this mess. So there I go. Then there was this girl. She was from Texas. And she had been there, I guess. I don't know how long she had been there already. So she saw me, and she went down. She followed me. And she was real good. She was one of these toughies, you know. She dressed up, you know, like she walked like that. Like she was kind of tough. So she told me Doris was her name. And she asked me what was wrong. So I told her what I had done. And I was crying. She says, don't worry, then so-and-so. And she started cussing me. So then I didn't use to cuss or anything. So then we came back up. And she went and went all of them. She told them all off. So then time went on, you know, and I started getting a little bit better.
Now, was this the very first day that this happened?
Maybe the second or third day. But the guy was really, really, he went up with his nose sticking up in the air, you know, and he never smiled or anything. He never had a nice word for me.
Now, was he a lead man?
No, he was just a worker. They put me with him so he could show me the job. So I learned my job so well. That I guess then that I was so afraid that I was gonna, I just made up my mind I was gonna do. So I learned my job so well that I learned this operation, and then they put me to the next operation, and I learned all that operation, and I got kept on going. And then afterwards we were riveting the skins on the elevator, and I had a girl, a Mexican girl, Irene Herrera was her name. I don't know if she's still there. And she was as good a bucker as I was, as she was a riveter. And I was the same way. I got to the point where I was very good. So there we'd be riveting up. We'd rivet 6 and 7 elevators a day. We'd just go right on through. We'd get up to the corner here, and then we'd come back, you know. And it was fun. I did it like fun, you know, that we used to have a lot of fun. So then I learned the whole operation till I got up to the front. In the front, they used to put this little flap with a wire, with a hinge. And you had to have that flap just right, and then so that it would swing easy without no rubbing anywhere. And you used to go with a little hammer and a screwdriver and knock those little deals, you know, down so that it'd be just right. And that guy that I used to work with helped me, teach me how to do it, and I could do it just like him. So,
but up until that point, you were both riveting and bucking. The two of you would change off.
Yeah, this girl and I. Yeah, we get up to the end, and then I just give her the gun or give her the bucking bar, and then we
change.
Yes, because we had to rivet the two skins, one on one. There was two skins and one on each side. So. Well, we had to have little bars about so big with a big handle. And the elevator had holes like that. And we used to stick the bars into the holes and then come through the runners up like that. See?
I see. Now the elevators, I'm not sure where that is exactly on the plane.
I'll show you. I got a picture here of helped them a lot during the war. You see, this part was the elevator.
Oh.
And this was the flap that I started learning all of this, putting the skin and everything on it, and then this was the last operation.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned the whole.
I see. So this whole section that connected the two wings, that connected the two fuselages.
Mm-hmm.
That was called the elevator.
This part here.
Mm-hmm.
And this part was a separate part.
This part
was built downstairs,
mm-hmm.
and some other people did that.
I see.
But you see, it was just parts that worked on. I worked on the whole plane, but I had the little.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's back up a little bit and tell me how you prepared to go to work that first day. Had you ever worn pants before?
To tell you the truth, no.
And how did you feel about that?
Well, I felt kind of funny, but then at the same time I said, well, what the heck? I'm just going to... And that's how it started.
Mm-hmm. And how did you prepare for going? When you went down, you took your application back in and you told them Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of instructions did they give you? Do you recall?
Well, they told me where the plant was.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured my own way to the streetcar. Mm-hmm. The red cars were running at that time, and that would take me up to the area where I worked.
And what sort of instructions did they give you about buying tools or about clothing? And
they gave me a list,
mm-hmm.
of the stuff that I would be needing. So I at that time, they used to sell you, through Lockheed, they used to sell you your tools,
mm-hmm.
and your toolboxes.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought a box because I always, in my 27 years that I worked with Lockheed, I always liked to have my own tools. I never liked to borrow.
Mm-hmm.
If I needed one tool for this part to do this job, I went and bought it,
mm-hmm.
so that I have it. Even if I was going to do it just the one time, I say, you never know when you're going to need it again.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought my whole toolbox through the company.
Oh, so that first day you went.
I got more or less the first day. I didn't buy everything,
mm-hmm.
but the first day they gave me the list, and from then on I started, you know, getting. And then I found out that they, so you could get boxes through them, and you
mm-hmm.
could get tools through them. So I started getting my tools like that.
And how about in terms of the clothing that you were going to have to wear? Where did you buy that?
Oh, Sears or mm-hmm. wherever, you know. It wasn't any, just a pair of pants and a blouse.
And what about
and low shoes? Mm-hmm. And I wasn't used to low shoes because I always wore in the house, I always wore the high heels.
Mm-hmm.
I always wore, you know... But then I had to get used to wearing low heels, and then I used to work Saturdays and Sundays sometimes. So I hardly ever put high heels, unless when there was a party or something going on, my husband and the friends would go up and pick me up on Saturdays. If I was working on that Saturday,
mm-hmm.
they'd pick me up, take me some clothes and shoes and everything, and then I'd change up there and then... And there were times when I was supposed to work on Sundays, but I never failed them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's one thing I've got, that if I promise you something, I come across or I don't know, it just me that I'm like that, you know, even if it kills me. And I've gotten in predicaments that I promise things, you know, and I said, I promise, and even if I'm dying, I have to go. And I would tell them that I would go work on Sundays, and they say, we tell you because we can depend on you. Because sometimes a lot of them would say, yeah, and they never showed up.
Now, tell me, what did you, what were you told to do about your head covering?
We used to wear hair nets.
Uh-huh.
Used to.
Now, do you remember walking in that first day, what your impressions were like and how you got assigned to this nasty man?
I was scared. I was very scared because, like I say, I had never been away like that, and I had never been among a lot of men, and actually, I had never been out on my own, myself.
Mm-hmm.
See? Whenever I had gone any place, it was with my husband.
How did that feel to you to do that?
It felt terrible, I tell you. I was scared.
Mm-hmm.
I was scared. So that, I think that's what made it, that it was all building up inside of me. And when that guy told me that I wasn't worth the money Lockheed paid me, it just came out in tears because I was so, so scared. Then afterwards, a year later, they had like lead men, but they weren't called lead men. So used to say, you should see her, you should have seen her a year ago when she first came. You go boo and she start crying. He says, look at her now, because I got to the point where I was, you know, I began talking just like all of them did.
When you arrived that first day, what were your impressions of the place physically? Do you remember?
Well, I just saw the place and I just said, gee, this, you know, see so many parts, things, you know, that you've never seen. And me, I'd never seen anything my whole life. So it was, you know, just exciting and scary
mm-hmm.
at the same time.
When they told you that you were going to be doing structural work, did it make any sense to you at all?
No, because I didn't know what structure was.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what it was all about.
When you arrived that first day, do you remember how you were assigned to your section?
Well, when I arrived, I went into the office.
Mm-hmm.
They had an office up there in the fifth floor. I think it was the fourth floor where they had the office. So I went down to the office,
mm-hmm.
and there they interview us, you know, where you live and all this.
Mm-hmm.
And, so then from there, they call somebody from the floor
mm-hmm.
to take us or take me. I don't know.
Do you remember, did you go, is it just yourself or was there a group of you who then?
I don't quite remember whether it was just me that went up there or who else was with me. Probably somebody else. I don't quite remember that.
Mm-hmm. And maybe let's just finish that first day and then we can stop at that point.
Okay.
When you say you walked in, I mean, now it makes more sense to me in terms of when you say the elevators.
Yeah.
You walked in on the fifth floor and they assigned you to this man.
Uh-huh.
And you say there was a long...
Yeah, there was a long area, you know, like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was a... Oh, big area.
Mm-hmm.
And they had all these horses, I guess you'd call them,
mm-hmm.
and they had these elevators stuck in like that. One on...
Oh, I see. And the elevators were what, about 25 feet long?
Maybe from here to the wall.
Uh-huh, so about maybe 12 feet, something like that?
Maybe.
And it looks like they weren't very wide.
They were, say about so wide.
Oh, so about 2.5 feet.
Probably, you know. I'm not quite sure, you know, but they were kind of wide. They were like that, and then they'd have them in these horses, you know, the horses are like that, and because they were tapered
mm-hmm.
like that. So they'd go in, the horses like that, and then they had...
So they'd be standing upright, in other words,
mm-hmm.
the elevators would be.
Yeah, they were flat like that, mm-hmm. you see. And over there in that other area, they would start framing them in the back.
I see.
They'd start first framing
yeah.
them, and then putting the skins, drilling the skins, and they came on like that.
And so the very first job when you were sent to this man
was to start at the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
framing them and putting little platelets.
I see. And now what exactly did you do in that job when you framed them?
I put some platelets that went on like that. I
mm-hmm.
quite remember.
And that was both, it sounds like it was a small piece, so you were both bucking and at the same,
yeah.
You were doing your own bucking?
And part of it,
mm-hmm.
and part of it, because there were small
mm-hmm.
deals, you know, that you could do by yourself.
Yeah. Okay, sure.